You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
It's Caitlin Bradnick.
And this is Sue Smith. Welcome to ScamWow Podcast.
Welcome. We're so happy to have you. We are so excited.
Yes.
Today we are covering something that has taken up so much of our time, so much focus. We know there's so much out there already discussing about this. But Sue and I, like, we had people call in. We had people tweet us. We had people message us. You've got to cover this. And so we are covering the Fire Festival.
Fire Festival. The internet has been calling for it.
Yes, we...
And I just want to say that this is the scam that made me want to start this whole entire podcast.
Yes.
Last summer when we were talking about the idea, and then I just haven't done it because there are so many scams.
We're inundated with scams. Historic, current, family-based scams. Scamming where I scam
political
my sister.
Political scams. Money yeah. scams. Like, there's so many. But this Fire Festival scam is rich.
Guys.
And it is perfect. And I just want to apologize from my heart for not getting it to you sooner.
No,
because
Sue,
it is my duty.
No. Okay. You can apologize, feel your feelings, but I'm telling you, I'm glad that we took our time because I wanted to, we really had to like ingest this disgusting tale.
We had to take it all in.
It was gross. And I have to say, so I am proudly call myself a con artist and a scammer, but I like things on sale and I shop at Nordstrom Rack and sometimes I lie to my siblings. But this story, it made me so grossed out and disgusted that I don't ever want to call myself, even jokingly. It was so horrible and just like ripe with racism. And there's so many layers to this. So we are appalled, but like, very excited to talk about this.
It's awful and we can't wait. But first, should we talk about our scammy weeks real quick for people?
Yeah, if you have a scammy week, basically I just like maintained that I had to live in this apartment that was pretty great and I didn't have to scam my way or anything. Things are okay and I'm just dealing with a small child. I will preface that I have a little bit of a scratchy voice because my son is now mimicking us and he has a really high, gorgeous song voice. And we were singing the song, you know, like, loving you is more than that. Like that high. Okay, I'm going to play a clip for you guys because Lewis repeated us and it is the funniest thing.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's any interest to anybody. And he just is singing along with it. And so we tried to like keep him doing it. And then I became obsessed and couldn't stop singing. So now I have a sore throat because I actually can hit that range. I don't know what
aww, what I was thinking. But you did. No, you did. You did great.
But my son can. Yeah, he does it.
Good. It's good. Yeah. No, I just had a scam that I needed to bring to the table.
Please.
The studio. So my husband, Austin, we're in LA. We're trying to do new things that we wouldn't normally do in New York. So he...
Live your life.
Live our lives. And so he heard about this play. This actress he liked, Carrie Coon, tweeted about this play called Linda Vista. And then he heard about it on NPR as well in the same day. So he was like, it's a sign from the universe that we need to go see this play. So... Yes. And it's like, you know, the Lincoln Center type place of LA, like fancy theater, not like indie theater or anything like that. Dress up. Yeah. So tickets were like $35 each. So $70. And then we had to pay for parking and then we paid for snacks and we got there and the play was so bad. And I feel
after you paid for snacks.
Snacks and parking and ticket. Like after all that, Caitlin, there was full sex on stage.
I love that. Okay. As an actor, I would never, ever do that. But when someone else does it, I'm just like, whoa, what happened that you're like, you know what? For my craft, I need my vagina open and I need to, the audience to see what's happening.
I saw a schlubby man's penis. Like, it was crazy.
It was there are enough schlongs on the internet. We don't need it in person.
We don't need that in person. And then, like, no. And then he, and it's so crazy because they're, like, having sex, which is fine. Have your sex. Live your life. But, like, nothing wrong with sex. But they're, like, in their theater, actor voices talking during their sex. And it was so
they're
weird.
They're on breath and on each other.
Yes. And we left halfway through and we were so mad.
Good. No, there is like a liberation with leaving halfway through. I think that is the best. I wouldn't ever want to do that to a friend. And if a friend was in a show, I'd feel guilty. But I used to work for Neil Simon and he left plays halfway through all the time.
Really?
Yes. And I thought it was so baller.
We felt so bad. But we were like, great. We can't do this anymore. And I want to clarify, it's not just because of the sex. It's just because it was supposed to be this comedy and that the audience was loving it. But it was just like a white man being a man baby and expressing his thoughts. And
yes, which is like Knocked Up or any other show that's been on.
Exactly. Maybe. But it wasn't funny. It wasn't funny at all. It was appalling. And like we were scammed by Carrie Coon. And then we were like, why was Carrie Coon promoting this play? And we went on her Twitter and her husband was the playwright. And we're like,
oh, that's why. It's
you
family.
Scammed us. Yes.
Yeah. But also, wait, he said he's heard it on NPR. So like somebody at NPR thought it was like very highbrow with a highbrow dick in your face.
But here's the thing. Not a lot of plays in LA. You know what I mean?
Oh, so that is the thing.
It was like our local LA NPR station. And I don't want to make this rule because I had a lot of rules like this in New York, but I don't think I want to see theater in LA. It's not what it's known for.
Well, here's the thing. There are a lot of rules in New York because there's so much happening in New York that you have to go like, look, the city is constantly moving and vibrating and somebody's always doing something for free that they want me to spend 3 hours watching. So you do have to create boundaries for yourself.
Yeah.
And go like, I need like a little preview if this is worth my time, because otherwise you would just sit in a black box theater to see everybody's NYU, you know, performance. But I guess now in LA, you're going to have to create your own boundaries.
I will give theater in LA maybe one or two more shots, but not a lot.
Sure, give it a shot.
No. Not a lot. This was so bad. The play was called Linda Vista. Carrie Coon, you can come after me, but I was, you scammed us big time, girl.
Yeah. Well, I hope, you want an artist to do well, but when it comes to a naked penis, I don't care. That's where I draw the line. I go like, you know what? Your dick's in my face. I don't think we can be friends.
No, I don't need that dick. And also,
I don't.
I guess that if it hadn't been so self-indulgent about this guy's thought, this 50-year-old white man's thoughts and feelings before that, it was
like, we need any more.
It was already so masturbatory that I didn't need to see his dick. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, he really just wanted to go all the way. Did he like come at the end or anything? Like, did he let it all out?
I mean, there was no actual cum, but he kind of made it seem like he finished, and then she didn't get off and she masturbated by herself, and it was like,
oh no.
Yeah, it was
too upsetting. Yeah, Sue right now is looking like she's going to throw up and pass out. I hate that. I did see a play when I was in college, and it was one of those like artists that toured colleges. And it was, the play was fine. I don't even think it was any good. It was a one-woman show, and she was like in her 50s, and she did the show. She had a fine, great body, but she did like half the show in her bra and underwear. Mm-hmm. And I just like, as an actor, was like, wow, that is so fucking great.
That's amazing.
Like, not that her age or her body or anything, just that like any person would be that like raw and naked and just be acting, because it was, she was supposed to have like a private moment in her house and she's like chatting and losing it, but she also talked to the audience, so it wasn't that private. But I don't remember any of the context of the show. I don't even think it was well written, but I just remember like staring at her as a young college student like, wow, that is a bravery that I don't have, to just like feel very confident, very, very naked. And yeah, and it, like, good body, bad body, that didn't matter. It was just the fact that she, like, was there displaying it. And I was like, well, that's not the theater I'm going to do. But you know what?
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes when it's that, like, it's not graphic, but when it's that, like, sort of striking and clear, you don't hear the context. I'm not listening to what the play's about. I'm just staring and I'm saying, like, did her nipple pop out? Like, I can't think of anything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not body shaming at all. This woman had a perfect body. I'm not body shaming. It's just like, it's the amount of like balls it takes to do that. Like, this was a huge theater, and they were like having full on sex. It was crazy. So I'm just in awe of it. I don't think I could ever do that.
I've never been cast in anything, but I've never had sex in like a movie. Oh no, I was cast, and I did have to wear a bra and walk a dog in Bryant Park.
There you go.
I was in the new movie Set It Up on Netflix, but they cut out my scene. And I was so excited because I like felt really confident. I was like in a bra and in a skirt, and the character like took off her top to pick up a pile of poop that the dog left because she was a nervous assistant and didn't have a poop bag, and a cop looked at her, and it was like so fun and exactly perfect. They did cut the scene, but at the moment I was like, wow, I am an actor and I am cast and I am feeling myself. But that was all. I probably could just do like a high-waisted skirt and bra, and that would probably be the
most.
That's
good. That's good. I've done, I did that Dear Kate's thing. They did like an underwear shoot of comedians.
Oh, yes.
I did that. Yeah. I did that a while ago, and then I did some, ironically, thing for Thinks, where I had to perform in my underwear. Funny. So funny.
Oh, guys, I got stuff on Thinks.
Yeah?
Yes, Alan used to work with the owner and the person of Thinks, and we have a lot of stuff on that.
I'm fascinated by her. I will always, like, any article I will read about her, she's fascinating. Okay.
I love it.
Thank you for letting me vent, guys, and share and bring this to the table.
Yes, you know, so we had to get it out. What we're talking about today is the Fyre Festival, which was so upsetting to me. I was upset for days. And basically, so let's like give a grand scheme. There are two documentaries that came out competing. And the festival was last year, and it was supposed to take place in the Bahamas. And it was supposed to be a music festival with models.
Here is an amazing clip from the Hulu documentary.
I met Billy. It's like, man, this guy's stinking rich. He's bringing all his friends down, yo. And he's paying for everything. It's like 4 jet skis, 4 boats, and, you know, have a wild old time, you know? I think the idea just popped up in his head like, ping, we're going to throw a festival, yo.
I would not trust a single word that Billy says about his own motivations or about himself, simply because Billy McFarlane is a con artist. I know all about them. You know, I've researched them. I know they ruin lives. They look into your soul. They see what you're missing, and they take advantage of that. The most surprising thing about con artists is just how normal and likable they are.
We have a lot of feelings. Yes. So the festival was started by this guy, Billy McFarland, who sounds like a fake person, and Ja Rule.
Yeah.
And they got together and they wanted to create basically a company and an app that would have regular people be able to book celebrities and singers and artists for things like a bar mitzvah or an office party. And you would directly contact them. There's no middleman, which isn't really a great idea.
Sure.
I know about that from being booked. It's weird. And then But to create that company, they decide to have a big, huge festival to hit it off. And they decide to do this festival in, I believe it was like anywhere from like 6 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. And really, it was incredibly slow. And they decided it was going to be on a deserted island in the Bahamas.
And none of them have experience with event production at all. No.
No. And so what's so crazy is that they were trying to create a company, and he has two businesses. He had the festival, which was like this whole experience, which a lot of people know about. And then there was the company, the Fire app, basically.
Yeah.
And he had a whole team of people working for him during this. And a lot of times throughout the process, he'd have people on the app side also be trying to help with the festival. Like, he just pulled whoever he could and got so many people involved.
Yeah.
And what was so insane, and how the all documentaries start, is that it started with basically the advertisement for the festival. And the advertisement for the festival was like one of the most successful social media ad campaigns, really probably incredibly historic, because they've made this point in both documentaries that everything leading up into like what everything in our zeitgeist, everything in millennials, everything happening in the world is leading up to this desire and need to be a part of something so specific. And they just narrowed in on that and made this incredible advertisement. And that was where the story really took off.
Yeah, they capitalized on the FOMO of it all. So they went to the Bahamas and shot this commercial that was like crazy, with all these influencers who were like Chanel Iman, Kendall Jenner, Bella Hadid, all these people.
Huge supermodels.
And then they all posted their social media. They were contracted. And then everyone was like, well, I got to go. And also, I want to say that the marketing, they hired a great marketing firm, and the design.
Amazing.
Everything was incredibly sleek. Like, I saw their pitch deck somewhere online. They had the pitch deck that they were showing to investors, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked so nice, you know?
So, yeah. So what is so crazy with all of this and why it went so awry is that this guy, Billy McFarland, and Ja Rule to an extent, they're really great at selling this cool idea. Like, they knew exactly like who social media influencers to pitch, how they wanted the video, how they wanted the music to sound. Like, they had so much control over the idea of what could happen.
Yeah.
But like so many things that I think are happening now with social media, is that it's just, there's nothing.
It's fake.
There. It's just empty.
Yeah.
There was nothing that happened. The event that they kept adding. So this guy, Billy McFarland, kept saying throughout the whole time, like, don't worry, we'll get it. That'll get taken care of. And it was literally like the day before the event. And he's like, don't worry, it'll get taken care of. And people were like, no, there's no bathrooms. He's like, don't worry, we'll get it taken care of. And so his idea was that, like, there's so much momentum. There's so much like hype. There's so much like his joy, their passion behind this event to get it ready and to hype it up. But there was no actual product.
Yeah.
And so that's where everything fell out. But I will say that advertising before was gorgeous. I mean, I will look at Bella Hadid all day, every day. Yeah. I think she's like one of the most beautiful people. They were the most gorgeous models, like on a beach. Everybody wants that. You want to be a model, be fucking a model, be smelling a model. I don't know. Like, that's exactly what our generation is dying to be around or look at, or like, the voyeurism of it.
Yeah. But as you're saying, like, there's no, There. You scratch the surface and there's nothing. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to break it down.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to break this down. Okay, so this guy, Billy McFarland, since he was young, was like, his mom even said, he's like a big ideas man. He does everything big. Now, I think he came from a really affluent family in New Jersey, and he's just this white boy with bright white teeth who smiles at everybody and is a fast talker.
Yes.
And somebody said in the documentary, he's like a used car salesman who is dying to sell you a car. Like, that's just a perfect explanation of him. And he is so hyped up in the sale that it takes over. And he doesn't actually have the brains or anything else to back it up. It'd be like if he was a used carman and then said to you, I'll build you a car next.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to build a car. He's good at sales.
Yeah. So for some reason, when I was thinking about his childhood, when the two documentaries were talking about his childhood, it reminded me of Mark Zuckerberg. Like, this New Jersey, very like working class, but yet like always determined to move forward and make it win. And they said he started his first business. They said this in the Hulu documentary, when he was like in second grade or something.
No, in fifth. Oh, yeah. In second grade, he was lying.
He was repairing
the crayons.
Crayons, which he pronounced cranes, which I'm like, can we not? Ugh. It was so weird.
No, I think he was actually pretty rich because his mom was like, you know, he's scuba diving at 10. Like, to be able to pay for your kid to go scuba diving at 10. Like, the things that she was using as a... So, basically...
Wait.
Oh, okay. Caitlin, do you want to get on that
get
mic?
Get on the mic, Kate.
Oh, it's not hooked up. Okay. Sorry. Caitlin is feeding me. The parents are both real estate developers.
Okay.
Real estate developers, not to offend any of you, but basically take something.
They're scammers.
That's not there. Yeah. And they create a whole nother thing and, you know, can sometimes ransack communities.
And
that's like a whole nother thing.
Our president is a real estate developer. Just.
Yeah. It really goes hand in hand. So he was from this family. The thing that I wrote down that made me so upset is he said he started his first business in fifth grade. It was a web hosting business, and he bragged on this documentary that he had hired three people from India. And he said he has three people from India working for him. And that was the first huge red flag of racism, of entitlement for his idea. Mm-hmm. He said it in a way of like, in India, like that they don't matter, that he just got these people to do whatever he wanted as a fifth grader. And that was the start that I saw of this piece of shit, racist little bitch start his life that then led us to this circumstance where he just believed it didn't matter. He just needed his job, his business to succeed. Doesn't matter who he used or who he hired. He didn't say anything like he didn't work with the person anymore or how he helped these or he didn't care.
The racism throughout this is immense.
It's insane. Also really it's gross really and crazy. Really like American. You see a lot of it. You just see a lot of these people going to other countries and stuff and just deciding like I'm just going to take over. Like we talked about Gregor McGregor. I'm just going to go to another country and own it as my own, and none of it's real and they don't care at all how these people live their lives. And so, yeah, the racism stuff made me so sick, and it's also so sick because it is happening. It is a thing. People are this way, and that's what's so frustrating.
Yeah. And I mean, actually, the parallels with Gregor McGregor are very huge because you're going to an island and taking over an island, basically, and telling the locals to figure it out.
So, guys, Gregor McGregor is someone that a previous episode, had on during like colonization times. And so I covered him. And if you want to hear that whole story and how insane that guy was. Okay, so Billy has this confidence that starts from childhood. And he created other companies where he wanted to create a credit card that piggybacked off the debit card that you already have with a real bank, but it's made of metal.
Yeah, so I would say, okay, about this credit card, he got a sheet of metal and duplicated his credit card and then used it. Credit card fraud, basically. He used it at the deli or something, and he was like, let me start a company. That's basically
what happened. He took the magnetic strip off his real credit card, put it on a piece of metal because he thought it looked cooler, and then was like, and then I used it at my bodega. How great. And we were like, you're such a shit.
Yeah, so the company is called Magnesis, which we learn in the Hulu documentary is actually a typo.
Yeah, he spelled it wrong because he's a goddamn idiot.
He made up the word.
And he doesn't know anything about math. Like, he just decides. This is like the audacity, this arrogance is what we saw throughout all of the documentaries, is that he just goes like, oh, I'm going to do this now. Now I'm this. Now I'm that. And I will say, like, with parallels to Mark Zuckerberg, at least like Mark Zuckerberg, doesn't he do like computers? He like knows. Yeah, he knows some kind of coding.
Yeah, he's got to know computers.
Yeah, and throughout this whole time, when he was doing Magnesis, they kept saying he's the next Zuckerberg. So I think that really stroked his stupid ego that he could be like that, like somebody that has any skill, but he doesn't. So
I just want to say this club, the Magnesis Club, so it was like there's a townhouse in the West Village and you can hang out with people and you pay to get in. And it's like these are the last people I would want to hang out with.
It's like God, ex-frat people who don't know what to do with themselves, with their parents' money.
Yeah, like extra money and just want to spend money. Like, and it's like, if you have to pay for that, then it's not authentic and you're a loser.
Well, and that's what's happening.
I'm going to say it.
And people were saying like, everybody interviewing that were a part of these clubs or anything, they basically were saying, like, I want that life that I've only seen and I don't have. And it is not authentic, but they're willing to pay for it, which is so gross. So Magnesis happens and he gets like the ear and gets like the pocket of all of these other investors, because this is like the start of when a lot of websites and when Facebook was happening, a lot of things were sort of like snowballing with these young millennials that Sue and I are also, we're all part of this community. These people that had these business ideas, and then some of them really like struck gold, and it'd be really exciting and sort of magical if you were a part of it and an investor and you didn't know something would have great stock suddenly and be really successful. So I think at this time you had a lot of investors that were much older than Billy, and so we're very much dated and not a part of the generation. And they'd go like, "Ooh, this looks exciting. I don't really understand it, but look how confident this handsome white kid is. I'm going to join it."
Some of the investors were like, "I was investing in Billy. I was investing in the person." Yeah. And I will say the Hulu documentary does a great job of explaining the societal phenomenon surrounding how this came to be, like of millennials, of the FOMO, of the time in which this
social
happened.
Media's influence. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of, you know, I guess people, the way somebody explained, a friend of my husband explained like venture capital, like you just have a lot of money and you invest in a ton of shit. And then if one thing succeeds, then you're great. Yeah, you made that money back. But then you're a millionaire or whatever. So I think that's what happened here.
It's a lot of gambling. And so he got money from a woman who had a really rich developer husband. He got money from this guy who owned the Chesapeake Oil Company, who ended up being a scammer himself and, you know, convicted of fraud. And so you had like...
Was that the guy who died?
Yes.
In a car crash? Yeah.
Weird.
That was weird. Yes. I was like... Is there a crime there?
Right.
What happened?
Yeah. Or suicide? I don't know. Crazy. But guys, don't quote us. We're just a podcast. Please don't come after us.
We're just making that up. Speculation.
We're just talking about our feelings, okay? Feelings, not facts.
Speculation and satire.
And satire. So basically, he had the hand of all of these people that thought it's just like a fun gambling exercise. Like, let's try it. And I think the number one thing of that, all of these con artists that we've covered, that we've met and that we know, they're very charismatic. They're very loving. They can look into your eyes and make you feel like you were the only person in the world in that room. And you are the one that is going to do this with them and connect with them. I mean, if you've ever been like scammed, I've been scammed into a gym membership. They made me feel like I was going to be the next Jennifer Lopez because I'm an actor, singer, dancer. So I need to join this gym because her song is playing right now. And you know what? Like, you never know. You could be next. Like, there's so many, like the sales pitch. It's not just this is a cool idea. It's that your life will get better because of this. You will be transformed.
Well, yeah. So for me, for a day job, I've worked in advertising for like 5 years. And he is so much like the bosses I've had because like in my last job, I had to learn to look at my boss when he was talking and being like, are you selling me on this idea? Like, you're selling me on how the company is going forward, how we're going to get better, how we're going to make more money, how it's going to be better for everyone. Like, I had to learn how to, like, cut through the bullshit and be like, what is real and what is fake?
And that's the thing. Well, so here's the thing, Sue, with you that I've noticed is that, like, these people that you have to work for are, yes, the sales part, but you're so good as a visual artist that you create something that I see, like, an image, and I'm like, that's so pretty. Like, I think the thing with sales as well is that, so these crazy gross salesmen that like Billy and like your bosses, they connected with really smart, great, brilliant like artists. And so artists that could create amazing media, that could create amazing television, that could like also throughout all of this, and that's we'll get into this in the second half. Like Billy had all of this footage. He had people following him around because I think he wanted to be on the next like Big Brother or be the next Bachelor. Like, he wanted to be on a reality TV show. So he has people just following him. And that footage, then he wants them to cut it and edit and make pretty. And he knew that he picked the right people to work for him.
But these sales guys are no dummies. They're smart, you know.
And they know what they know aren't good at. Well, this is the crazy thing. So most of them know what they're not good at. And they know where they need somebody to pull up the slack or somebody to do the business. So Billy, in this story, and this is what sort of happened, when you have a boss who has a big, huge company, typically they know their strengths and weaknesses. So you have a big company and they run and they're like, you run creative, you run finances, you run payroll and all of this stuff. Now, with all of this that happened is that Billy had such an insane ego, is that he believed that either your time wasn't that valuable and you'll figure it out and you're sort of like a nobody and you'll do the work for him, or it was that he thought he could solve it. Like he actually doesn't have all the pieces of the puzzle.
I think these guys are very big picture. Yes. So like my old boss, they're very big picture and they don't think about the day-to-day and the logistics of it.
Didn't.
So my old boss, when we were pitching ideas for a client, we were in a room pitching ideas and we would just like say all this stuff and I'd be like, well, logistically, I don't think that we can pull this off in this budget and blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, don't think about that. Don't think about that. And that's the way that we would create ideas, which then trickles down to the production people. Mm-hmm.
And all the pressure's on you.
And fucks everybody over. Yeah, fucks everybody over.
Right. So also throughout this time, if there was anybody that disagreed with Billy on his team throughout this process, they would either be fired, asked to leave, or basically shut up and said, like, we don't like negative, we only want positivity. And it would literally be somebody that was like, there aren't toilets on the island. And they'd be like, you know what? We don't want this negativity. So then he would ignore people.
So my friend was like, do you think that any of the people that worked with him felt guilty doing so? And it's kind of like, well, no, because people who tried to say something were fired right away.
Right.
So like that in the Hulu or the Netflix documentary, that like Finnish or Norwegian guy.
The pilot. Okay, guys. So Billy hooked up with
the pilot
who said he learned how to fly on video games.
And he'd on only Microsoft.
He'd only been flying for 6 months. And he flew Billy in a private jet to the Bahamas because they hooked up for some reason. And I'm like, what a dumbass.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So guys, here's a clip from the Netflix documentary on the Fire Festival.
They really wanted to do tents. So what I did is I took my wife and we tried to sleep in a tent for one night. And it was so terrible that, you know, this tent is just not going to be safe. And it's so loud, so many mosquitoes. To do this tents without air conditioning is pretty brutal. It's just not possible. So I strongly recommend it against the tents.
Keith raised a lot of concerns about these things. And then I think he was asked to no longer be part of it.
Yeah, he, though, writes a hand-drawn map of the island to say to Billy, like, there's no, like, running water, there's no plumbing, there's no infrastructure, and they fire him immediately. So what Billy was selling for this music festival was that you're going to come to, I think it was 2 weekends or more, and you would come and you could buy, like, a cabana, which was like a house. You could do an Airbnb house, or you could have a tent on the beach, on this exclusive beach, and he was selling it this beach that was Pablo Escobar's old beach.
Island.
Island. Which is so insane because Pablo Escobar was a horrible murderer who like ruined people's lives. And he's like, guys, isn't it cool? Like, that's exactly what this like dumb white guy ignorance is. Like, he doesn't actually know anything about Pablo Escobar. He just sounds cool and rich. But the guy was like really horrible and a monster. So he's selling this. And so they did try that island that Billy said he owned. We let her find out he didn't actually own it. But he told everyone he did.
And the owner was not happy that he used Pablo Escobar's name.
Yeah, they said, we don't want that to be a part of it. And that the number one thing, the first thing on this ad is it's Pablo Escobar's island.
So then they got kicked off the island.
Yep. They couldn't use the island that the whole ad campaign was shot on this island. And so that was what they were selling. And what you see in the ads was this island at one point they were on. And then during that point was when the pilot came, when he stayed with his wife, when he was like, guys, this is really bad. And then the video was released and then the owner of the island kicked them off because they were like, please don't mention Pablo Escobar. You did exactly what we didn't want. So they had to find another island. So they are still selling tickets for this. Like at no time during this, when all of these like flaws and all these problems are happening, nobody stops any of the internet ticket sales. Nobody stops the ads. They're still saying, this is great. We can't wait for you guys to come. But they literally don't have an island. So then somebody says that, what was the island, Sue? Grand?
Norman Cay?
No, Exuma. Exuma was the island that he
Great
said.
Great Exuma?
Great
something?
Exuma. Yeah. That somebody suggested that they take a space there. And what they ended up doing was having part of a Sandals resort that was actually like a driveway. It was probably like used for parking eventually.
It was rocky for sure.
Really rocky and gross. And they called, and then in their map online, they just like cut the rest of the island, like clip arted it out. So it looked like a deserted island.
And the amazing thing about this is they got the space and they booked it, but they also booked it for like during a regatta tournament
and
on the busiest weekend of the year for the island.
Is that people were like, no, that's really important to us as like a culture. You know, we won't have houses to Airbnb. Nobody's on the roads. Like, this is like part of us as a community. He didn't care. And they said also in the documentary that the people of these islands, the people that live there, like part of their culture, the pride is being hospitable, being loving. Mm-hmm. They know that people want to come and vacation there. Like that's there. It's on the table that people are looking for an escapism. And them doing a great job is what gives them so much confidence and love for their job, for their careers. And so this is, and I'm sure it happens, I'm sure people do it all the time, terrible people come and take advantage, but this entire experience was one man, one company coming to take advantage of this beautiful community of people. And so you see in both documentaries just like men and women that were just worked to the bone, people that weren't paid. It was modern day slavery. I said it from the second it started. I was like, Alan, he's treating these people like slaves. Like he's not. And I was watching with my husband and he was like, okay, well, let's, you know, we were like trying to figure it out. And at the end, sure enough, he didn't pay anybody. Like he never said, I appreciate what you're doing. There's one woman in the documentary that, you know,
Marianne Roll.
Oh, yes. She's so heartbroken. Thank God there's a GoFundMe and people are paying for her experience. But she said that there wasn't even anybody to say you did a great job and you picked up the slack. So there was no.
And she said she worked day and night for like 3 days, like 24 hours around the clock. She had to pay 10 people out of her own pocket.
Out of her
and
savings.
Then she, out of her savings, she lost 50 grand out of her savings. And Billy didn't pay that back because she wanted to pay her workers because they're part of her community.
Yes.
And yeah,
and
she has to
come and go,
people.
And these people are still in their lives day in and day out. And so basically, because there was no resources on this island, all of these workers, Billy would just say, figure it out. And so figure it out, like would trickle down to then one woman who had a restaurant, had to feed workers, had to feed hungry.
And even when they showed up with school buses of people, they didn't know where to go. Mm-hmm. They didn't know where to take them to the festival. They took them to her restaurant.
So
and she was and people were like, is this the fire festival? And she was like, I guess. Yeah. And then she just had to deal with it, you know?
So that is sort of the island had to do that. They just had to like absorb all these tourists that were brought because of Billy. It's like it was really a day or two before people were scheduled to come, and they had these huge packages of a really luxurious nice tent.
Yeah.
A real nice tent. And all these things planned. And it was the day of, and people are saying, like, we don't have this beautiful tent that you were selling people. And he just like didn't care. And I think his ego was so big, the momentum was so big, his I don't know, I hate this guy. So
I don't know.
Yeah, so it's the night. Okay, so basically it's the night before and nothing has happened. The island looks almost identical to how it did before, except it has like five different truckloads of Amazon products that he purchased and FEMA tents that help refugees and people in natural disasters.
Which are great, but they're not $50,000 tents that these people pay for.
So he had an advisor and a side guy named Grant, who is his like number one guy. And guys, I hate Grant. He talks down to people. He's such a little bitch too. He
sends 1,000-word emails about the music. Yeah.
He's so controlling. So they were so controlling about this ad and the feeling, but they had no idea how to make literally a tent. They couldn't pitch a tent themselves.
Oh no.
And so while all this was happening, Billy's also running out of money because he's sort of paying people to shut up, paying people off there's a lot of customs in the Bahamas. He wasn't paying customs, so he'd have his water confiscated
Andy.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's so gross. Yeah. So all these things aren't working and he's running out of money. And he told his investors he was going to make all of this money. So they're packaging more and more and more tickets. And they're saying, please put all of your money first on a wristband. So it's a cash-free zone. So he's basically, all of the people coming, he's asking them to invest more money in their ticket, more money in their stuff. And there's right now just mattresses in white FEMA tents.
And it rains. It pours the night before.
And through all of this, he is also pushing. So he had these like 10 huge supermodels be in this ad. And then he pushed everybody to do a viral post that was just an orange square on Instagram. And they said, as a campaign, it was really like to stop people in their tracks. Now, as an actor and who's done ads, like there's one thing about like doing the ad and shooting the commercial. But then when they ask you to do stuff on your personal ad, that's a whole different thing. So he either paid each of these people additionally to post this personal ad, or he also promised them like a trip and all this like these no expenses and all these great things. So I'm getting
orange square.
Yeah, he had these people post this orange square. So then that was going viral. And that's where he was putting more of his money instead of paying any of his workers.
Right. So they say in the thing that Kendall Jenner got paid $250,000.
Which is
and
a steal.
The girl says it's a steal. And I for sure agree with like just the shit that I've done for work for influencer stuff is that like we pay these kids maybe I know that there was one influencer who's like a 17-year-old kid and we paid him $50,000 for like one video. So like this money, these amounts are real. Like it's really crazy. But also I think there was like some intimidation on the part of Billy and Ja Rule of these influencers. So like there's that scene in the, I think it's the Netflix documentary where
he wants him to get in the Ja Rule. Water.
Yes, the I get hated in the water.
That scene. One night. They wanted to turn the bonfire into like the Billy and Ja party on the beach. And that's all on camera.
What is that? Come on, baby. We about to create art. Come on, get over here. And just get in the water. If y'all want to put it on the team, whatever, it don't matter. But let's get in the water. But
hell no, I'm not getting
in the
water.
Yo, get in the fucking water, Chanel. Hey, yo.
Well, they wanted to get everyone in the water, so they made it sound as if it was going to be a scene, but nobody was there directing that scene.
Guys, what's the purpose of what you're trying to do?
This is the best shot. This is the money shot.
Us jumping on you.
It was them partying with talent that didn't really know what they were there to do. But in the end, it didn't matter.
Wait, we are selling a pipe dream to fucking
They were selling a vision of
I think that they intimidated them to post more on social than they were contracted for, is what I think.
It really
because there are
me.
Scenes on the set where Grant is like, everybody needs to be posting, everybody needs to be using the hashtag and hashtagging us. And it's like there was a little bit of this like intimidation and this force coming from
and
men
a lot of
to
drinking,
women.
And they were all trashed the whole time. And they would say that like Grant would get trashed and then like go on his jet ski and like blow off steam and then come back and keep drinking and like, oh, definitely there had to be cocaine. Like there's a lot going on.
There's that scene in the Netflix documentary where Ja Rule is like, real talk, if we want to swim with the pigs, we're going to swim with some fucking pigs because we're spending all this money. So it's like they really thought that they could just do whatever they wanted because
they thought
were spending
they could own people. They did.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Real talk. Like we're spending a lot of fucking money. If we want to go fucking see the pigs, we go see the pigs.
And find a way to make it work.
That's it. If we want to go fucking see the pigs and the girls want to go see the pigs, we go fucking see the pigs.
So this was just the start, you guys. It's like the festival didn't even happen. Like the festival didn't even happen yet. It's like just all this ad stuff. Let's talk about the toast really quick. So this is sort of like what I wrote it down.
So Ja Rule gave this toast after they swam with the pigs while they're still on the island shooting the commercial. It's here's to fucking...
No, living
like rocks,
like movie stars, living like movie stars, rocking like
partying
like rock stars, and fucking like porn stars.
And also, and he
said it over and over again.
Yeah,
he loved it. He thought it was the most creative thing he's ever written.
And also, I mean, he made Billy say the fucking like porn stars part. And also, so when he said that, I was like, you guys are doing so much cocaine that there's no way you're fucking like a porn star. Absolutely not.
No.
You're
and
not
you're so
getting
selfish.
That little
you are
penis
not
up.
A good fuck.
Yeah. No. No.
So let's talk about like really quickly what happened. And then I want to get into the fuck Jerry and the advertising.
Okay. So.
Because that's really pissed me off. So, okay. We're day of.
Day before.
The night before it rains, there's a huge rain, not just like a drizzle, like things are soaked. So the mattresses, everything they said that people could have, it's just a white tent that's soaked and a mattress that's soaked. There's no bed sheets.
Nothing.
There's still no toilet.
And the mattress, but the mattresses aren't even in the tents. They're just like strewn about. Yeah.
So the place is a mess and people are saying like, please call it off. Can you tell us it's not happening? But no, influencers are at the airport. They're still hashtagging it. Their ad campaign is telling them to please post. And then Blink 182 decides they're not going to do it. Like they get word and they drop out. And then a bunch of music acts start to drop out. But all of these influencers and young rich people are on their way to the Bahamas.
Yeah, so they are flying from Miami to the Bahamas, and I think it had been billed as a private jet that they're taking from Miami.
Yeah, it's just
a
huge commercial flight.
Yeah, I mean, and this horrible influencer is like, this is like low economy class.
I hated her. There's this one influencer, she's in both documentaries, and guys, I hate her so much. I Googled her. She was in like the remake of Saved by the Bell. She played Kelly Kapowski. I hate her so much. She is like the worst of social media influencers.
Yeah.
Ugh,
she's so snobby. And she's so... I love the part in the Hulu documentary where they're like, okay, so what is a personal brand? And they have like a super cut.
Yeah, they interview the influencers and they ask influencers like, what is your brand? And they all say the same thing.
They have a super cut of like... Because how everybody is becoming a brand on social media and everybody is like, you know, does this fit in my brand and what is my brand? And it's carefully curated lives on social media. And the interviewers are like, okay, so what's your brand? What's your brand? What's your brand? And they're all like, positivity.
And it's and they really guys they really take time to think. They're like, oh, you know what it is?
They do. Oh, it's like they do.
Having a good life. And then you know what? Positivity.
They take a moment.
Like as if they've created the word themselves.
It's the deepest thing I've ever thought of. Positivity.
And it's so funny. And it's like, you know what? You're all just rich and you all have great white teeth. And I'm sure your parents paid for a lot of things. And basically, like, and they mention this a lot too. And it's frustrating, but like a lot of social media, if you don't post something on social, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's like a lot of generations. The generation happening right now, it's like, is it real if you don't post, you know? And really interesting, if it's not there in your social, it's not a part of your experience that you share with others. It can be your own private experience, but, and then your experience shared with others, that has a value on it suddenly.
Yeah.
Like, and then displaying your stuff.
Yeah. And the Netflix or the Hulu, I can't remember. I think it was the Netflix one. They're saying there's a company in Russia that you can pay to do a photo
shoot on a private jet.
Just a photo shoot on a private jet for your Instagram.
And they're like, it's very successful. And so that's what's happening right now is this. So
literally go fuck yourself. Really shitty, I'm sorry.
I hate everyone. It's so ridiculous. Really shitty influencers are flying, guys. Okay. And they arrive and they're all like, huh, this is interesting. And they're packed onto yellow school buses. And the people of the Bahamas are like, guys, it's bad. And Billy's just blocking it out. He's blocking it out. People have come to Grant, his second in command. People are tweeting Ja Rule. Everyone's literally blocking them and physically blocking them on social media. They will block accounts that question or have any question. They will delete questions, which is so horrible. And these people show up on a bus on this gravel, dangerous, like garage,
one of my
like, parking lot.
And one of my favorite influencer video on the bus is they show up, they get view of this site for the festival and these FEMA tents, and this one influencer starts crying. She was like, turn us back, we have to go back, like, like it's the worst thing that's ever happened to her in her entire life, which is amazing.
And guys, while all this is happening, there are refugees that are living in tents. This is what was driving me crazy.
Yeah.
It was like these people were paying like $500,000, $200,000 to have these experiences. But you know what? Like there are people that are forced upon them. Like you were just born into a rich fucking family, mm-hmm. or you just got lucky a couple times. But there are people that through no fault of their own were born in a country that is like war ridden and have to survive for their lives and are refugees. And that is happening at the same time this is happening. And you guys are acting like these little bitch victims when other people actually have to live like this, mm-hmm. and are doing the best that
and
they can.
And are happy to live like that because it's an upgrade from how they've been living.
Yes, yeah. Better than being shot in the face. I was so disgusted by everything. I mean, yes, it is horrible to suddenly be somewhere and be very scared and very confused, but it happens to people all over the world.
Deal with it.
Like shit fucking happens. Yeah. And just for them to see their reactions was so grotesque.
Yeah.
Like I was like, you have no idea. Like you have no struggle. Just like Billy doesn't know how to literally build a tent. A lot of these influencers didn't seem like they knew anything that was happening. And people thought it was really funny. They thought it was like rich people problems. They thought it was like, there's a part of it that is comedic in a way of like, isn't this insane? But I just thought it was so disgusting how super out of touch all of these people are.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of people.
That's the Schadenfreude of it all, or Schadenfreude. I don't know how you pronounce that word, but like when you delight in someone else's misery, it's seeing rich people fail like when this was all going down, I was like, yes, give me more articles.
The whole
about
internet
this.
Was. Yes. Everybody was.
I want to see these like privileged assholes get taken down who've never had to work for anything, who can pay $50,000 to stay in a tent and like, fuck yourself. Like, seriously, mm-hmm. go fuck yourself. So that's why I think everyone loves the story. And the story is so brilliant.
Yeah, everybody loves it because it's so gross.
And there was this quote. I'm not sure who the comedian is in the Netflix documentary, but it was so spot on.
Ron
like,
Funches?
Yeah, I think that's who he was like.
I love him.
White people love camping unless it's a surprise. It's like.
Oh, no, that was the Daily Show guy.
Trevor Noah? Was it Trevor Noah?
Trevor Noah said that. And then Ron Funches is like, well, you paid $250 to see Blink-182, so that's on you.
Yeah, exactly. So we're at the school bus. We're
the
in
the school buses. They are dropped off, and the only place on this entire island that – this no, it wasn't even an island. It's this parking lot, this half of
gravel pit,
deserted sandals, you know, reject.
Yeah.
Is one house that everybody who works there has been staying in, the social media team, Billy, all Grant, all those people. And so people just start lining up in front of the house because they're like, are we going to check in? What's mm-hmm. happening? And more people are coming. And one of the guys started to check people in. And then at one point, Billy gets on a bunch of like stacks of wood and just yells to everybody, go find your own tent. It's a free for all. So then mm-hmm. it becomes Lord of the Fucking Flies. And people start running and it starts to get dark. Like it's about to get dark. People are running. There's no food. There's no water. Their luggage in the middle of the night is delivered on trucks and they say, figure it out. There's no cell phone yeah. to charge in. So also these
it's
lockers,
like Lord of the Flies for it sure. Is.
And yeah. they just, you see these people running, carrying mattresses, like running and fighting. And it is like the ugliest thing in the world. Like people are genuinely afraid of their lives. They feel deserted. They feel panicked. And Billy encouraged it. He's like, just go figure it out. Like
figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these people are so upset and everybody wants to talk to him, wants to like ask him a question, wants to tell him what they're upset about. And he is toning it out. And then at some point they say he just disappears. He just
Wait.
Leaves.
He just disappears. There's one detail about this I love is that they spent $2 million to rent Airbnbs for these influencers. And was then Billy, or was it five? Is that what you're saying?
I can't remember. Yeah.
I can't remember. It was a few million dollars for influencers for Airbnbs. And then there was a box of keys and Billy lost the keys.
That's what he says in the interview.
Millions of dollars worth of Airbnbs.
He
says
he lost the keys to the houses. And they're like, how do you lose millions
of dollars?
How
do you do that?
And he's like, yeah, I did. Like, and so that's obviously a lie. He obviously didn't have the Airbnbs because they said that the regatta was happening that weekend, that people weren't renting out their houses. So he would take money for the Airbnbs and never actually give it. Or the few people that he gave it to. So throughout all of this, not only
this did not click with me. I'm glad you're pointing it out.
He was lying about everything. Because
I thought he really lost the keys. Yeah.
No, he believed if he made this little lie now, he will be able to solve the problem in his own time. Basically, Billy was like fighting against the reality of time. And he was like, if you guys and the reality of like what it takes to do something, physical hard work and brains, he would say he would have like a bunch of these lies so that he could say, please just give me more time. And they said that he would even do this with his old accounts. Like when he did that credit card, that he would sell people tickets to pay off what he paid for other tickets. Like he just, there was always another thing so that he was always in debt. He's always treading water, but he has something on the horizon that he'll sell you because he has to pay his investors.
The last thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, all of that was a lie. And what is weird is that he's doing these interviews and you just see his like eyes kind of blinking and he just is in this intense denial and entitlement mm-hmm. that he will never admit that he messed up because he mm-hmm. really in his heart believes there is a solution. Just give me one more day. Just give me another $1 million. I will find it. And that is the arrogance that is like kings and queens and shitty explorers and like, you know, conquerors have. They're like, don't worry. Just hold on. I got you. And it's like, no, you are ransacking a country and you are ruining people's lives. Like we don't want to give you any more time. So
he doesn't think he's lying. He doesn't think he's being deceptive.
He really doesn't.
No. Mm-mm.
And I think And he also, through all these interviews, people will ask him questions. He's like, I don't know, I blocked it, or I'm not there yet, or I'm not. Like, mm-hmm. he has this skill to block out reality, like, that's mm-hmm. incredible. That's like the denial of somebody who has had an extreme tragedy in their lives, or was in a terrible car crash, and you're like, I can't remember, I just had to block it out. He has blocked out any sort of feeling, emotion, responsibility. He's blocked out ownership of anything.
I will say, okay, so the Hulu documentary has an interview with Billy McFarland, who is the owner of this. And then the Netflix documentary has all this behind the scenes footage of this shit as it's going down. So the Hulu documentary has an interview with him and it has come out that they paid $250,000.
They paid him for the interview of the Hulu documentary, which just really pisses me off.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. So one part talking about like his emotional state in this and him blocking it out was he talks about Ja Rule and he's like, Ja Rule didn't know I take full responsibility. This is all my fault. And the way he said it was like, I felt like he was like almost scared. I was like, did Ja Rule like beat him up or something? I wish. Or like, I felt he was like that scared. Was
the, yeah. I don't know.
He seemed like very jaded when he very jilted and shook when he was
like
talking
a kid
about
who was beaten up. Yeah, he looked like he was like, don't shoot me.
Ja Rule didn't know.
Okay, guys. Also, we are going to take a break and we are going to have a second episode. So hold on. We'll be right back. And if you want anything else, you can always give us a phone call and tell us your feelings on the Fyre Festival.
Yeah.
We have a call line. And I mean, I'm sure Sue and I are trying to cover everything we can, but I'm positive that we are missing something. So please call in. Tell us your feelings. Our line to call us, our hot tip hotline is 347-509-9414. We love you. We love to hear your tips. You can also follow us on Instagram at ScamWow Podcast, Twitter ScamWow Podcast, email us at ScamWow Podcast.
Oh, and I would love to say if you can rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you're listening, that would be so nice of you.
It just makes us feel so good.
It really does, because we get the reviews. Our producer, Kate, sends them to us and we read them and we're like, oh, thank you.
Okay, guys. So this next episode is going to be out tomorrow.
Yeah, we're taking a little break. We're going to like regroup and like calm down a little bit. And then you will have the part two of this tomorrow.
We love you. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.